You know, I don't know how to follow that up as well. You know, other than, you know, this is what we've been talking about all month long, is there's a business time, there's a time, and this is something that God created that's very beautiful. And that's just kind of a picture, a very raw, authentic, and yet probably, unfortunately, maybe too much of a true picture for many of us. And yet, you know, that's what happens with our sexuality. We have a lot of misconceptions. In fact, earlier this week, I picked my daughter up, who's 9, from school. And you always have great conversations on the ride home from school. And so, you know, we're on our way home, and she said, "You know, Dad, some of the boys at school say that you cuss a lot in church." And I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking maybe, but what is it that they've said that I've said? And she said, "Well, they say that you say the S word a lot." And I'm like, "Well, I've not honestly never said that one. I mean, I speak pretty authentically and open, as if you're on my back patio, but I've not." And I thought, well, maybe she's not referring to the same S word I'm thinking about. And so I said, "Macy, which word is it?" And she said, "Well, it's the sex word. They say you say that a lot." And I'm like, "Well, Macy, I've been saying it all month. I mean, we're in a series called, you know, about sexuality." She's like, and I said, "And by the way, it's not a bad word. It's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful thing. We've talked about that." She said, "I know. I'm trying to tell them that. It's a very beautiful thing." And I'm then picturing them going home to their parents and explaining, you know, what the fourth grade pastor's daughter said. And, you know, and yet this is the message that we want to communicate, that God created this incredibly beautiful gift. And so if you're a guest today, we want to welcome you. You've caught us in the last week of this series called Collision, where sex and spirituality collide. And we're taking a look at how these are deeply integrated issues. God gives this incredible gift of sexuality. And my name's Kurt, by the way. I'm a pastor here at Cross Point. My email's on the website if you'd like to send me some comments. I just tell you that. I get them all the time. But before we do anything else, let's pray. God, I'm thankful we can come into a place like this and we can laugh. We can have fun. We can be real. We can laugh at things that are real. And so you created us to do that. You also created us to grow, to learn, to experience you. And so in these next minutes, these next few moments, I'd ask that God, in some unique way, you'd meet us in this place. We all come from different backgrounds spiritually. We have all had different backgrounds sexually. And yet in some unique way, you have the ability to meet us exactly where we're at. And I'm going to ask that you would do that today. I ask God that grace would just rain down into this place. God, that it would trickle down. That for some of us, God, that you would just unload your grace on us today. That's what you do. And I would ask that you would cover this place, that you would help us to experience you in some new way. Help me to be articulate, to be accurate. And God, just give us a picture and an experience with you, I pray, according to your name and character. Well, you know, earlier this week, as I do get a lot of emails from people, especially when we're in series like this, comments, conversations, and somebody sent me an interesting article that I thought, you know, just really captures kind of the tension of this issue of sexuality, spirituality, how it's integrated in every aspect of who we are. And it comes from Relevant Magazine. It's titled "The Secret Sexual Revolution." And Dr. Janelle Williams-Paris, who's a professor of anthropology as well as sociology, she writes about this and she says, you know, if the statistics are as high as what we think they are when it comes to premarital sex, extramarital sex, then the church, this is kind of a call to the church to live in reality. Maybe we need to change the message. And I thought, you know, what she's saying has some truth in it. And so here's one of the things she said. She said, we need to talk to people as they really live in the world they really live in. And what she's referring to here, she's saying, hey, statistics show that, you know, the numbers aren't going down on this issue. You know, 80% of Christians between the age of 18 and 29 have been sexually involved at some point or another. And these are people who say they're following Christ. Likewise, 64% of people in the age category of 18 to 29 have had a sexual experience in the last year. And yet they say, we're trying to pursue God. 42% are currently in a sexual relationship. And she's saying, hey, you know, the numbers aren't really showing what we think they should be showing. And so she goes on, she says, if rates of premarital sex are really that high, but we continue to talk as if the vast majority of people are virgins when they get married, we're out of touch. We need to address reality. And I thought, you know, there's a tension here. As you think about this, it's just this reality of, you know, is God's standard really reasonable anymore? I mean, is it really reasonable? I mean, is it outdated with the things we deal with today? Can we really say, yeah, that's a standard we should still strive for? And there are a number of factors that really point to that. In fact, if you were to talk in circles that are looking at statistics like this, they would say one of the primary reasons that sexuality is on the rise outside of the context of marriage is because we're getting married later in life. The average age that someone gets married today in this decade is around 28 and a half, 29 years old. It used to be like 12, 13, 14 years old. old. You know, individuals are getting married. They're getting married at the peak of their sexual experience. So there's not all these pressures to want to explore sexuality outside of that context. And some just say, hey, the fact that we're getting married creates a whole new set of issues. Maybe the standard's wrong. And then others would say, well, yes, it has to do with that, but it also has to do with just the value of marriage. There's not a high value on marriage anymore. And it's kind of a call to the church to say, you know, do we really value marriage for what God intended it to be? It's one of the reasons you will hear me regularly from this stage talk about, you know, God's intentions for marriage, God's intentions for sexuality, the vows of intimacy, vows of loyalty. We talk about these regularly throughout the year. This idea of oneness, this idea of nakedness between a man and a woman who are husband and wife. It's not just a physical nakedness, it's an emotional, a mental, a spiritual. It's that we're totally vulnerable with one another and connected. We're one. Because this kind of lifts up this value that God created this institution, this marriage, this relationship for the highest levels of intimacy to be experienced. And yet these are the tensions that we find. In fact, there's another author professor that was quoted in this article as well. His name's Scott McKnight, and he said something else. He said, it's absolutely not realistic. He said, but it is also not realistic not to do a lot of things, and that doesn't mean the Bible doesn't tell us the ideal design of God is not to have premarital or extramarital sex. And so see, here's this point where all of a sudden there's this collision. There's this collision between God's values and our values right here in our culture today. It's one of those things that, you know, we can say, well, maybe we need to change our values or change the parameters or the standards. But the reality is if God designed it this way, then the consequences are still remain regardless of how we manage it. And I know that when we talk about these things, when we come across this kind of teaching, I mean, there's a lot of kickback. I know there's a lot of sophisticated, hard-held beliefs. And I want to talk about two of them at least this morning. Kind of these myths. You know, one is this. I've heard people literally say, Kurt, well, you know, come on. That might be good for you, but that's not good for me. It's a common myth. What's good for you? What's good for the church isn't necessarily good for me. I don't necessarily embrace those values. You know, I'm not necessarily looking for what God designed this to be. What's good for Christians isn't necessarily good for me. Sex and sexual behavior are very much a preferential kind of thing. And so you prefer that, I don't. And so, you know, so it may not be good for me just because it's good for you. And if this is where you are, if you follow this and you've had these thoughts before, regardless of your spiritual orientation, regardless of what you think about the Bible, about God, about the things He lays out for us, you know, I want to throw something else into your realm of thinking, and that is this, that when it comes to our sexuality, it's not really a preference issue, because because the outcome and the consequences are very predictable. And so, you know, if it's just a preference, then the outcome and the consequences could vary. All right, and so it's not like saying, well, you like this kind of art and I like this kind of art, or you like this kind of food but I prefer this kind of food tonight, or you like this kind of music and I like this kind of music. See, in those scenarios, the outcome and the consequences are not necessarily predictable. But when it comes to our sexuality, the outcome of misusing our sexuality and the consequences are very, very predictable. And so, you know, it's more like nutrition, right? I mean, we understand nutrition. We understand that if I eat all kinds of fatty foods, sugary foods, starchy foods, the outcome is very predictable, and there are some reasonable consequences for that, right? And I also understand that if I choose to eat a fruit diet of fruit and vegetables and reduce my red meat intake, which I obviously don't do very much of, you know, then we know the consequences, again, are very predictable. And so, you know, you might say, well, you know, it's not that way with my sexuality. It is. It really is. And so the outcome is predictable because of design. Because it's designed that way. And here's what I want you to understand. That sex is not just a matter of preference, but it's a matter of divine design. I mean, God had a very specific design, a very specific context, very specific outcome that He desired out of that. And He made it that way. And when we don't pay attention to the consequences, then the consequences can be detrimental, disastrous. And so that's one big myth we have to wrestle through. I mean, regardless of whether we believe what God said, I mean, there are consequences, and we begin to connect those dots. You know, another big myth that often I'll hear a kickback is, you know, there's a lot of boredom with exclusivity. I mean, it's very, you know, the idea of sex with one person for the rest of my life, for the rest of our married life, I mean, that gets kind of dull. I mean, I see in the movies the most exciting sex happens when I meet somebody in the elevator for the first time. I always go down and, you know, have dirty, all laid out, passionate sex, and then I move on to somebody else. That's where we see the passion. And yet, you know, travel down this logic line with me for just a moment. I mean, we think, you know, we need some practice before we get married, right? I mean, I don't want to look stupid when I get into my marriage relationship. And so, you know, you want to, it's almost like you're saying, I want to enter this relationship and be like, man, wow, you really practice, man. I'm impressed. Well, I'm glad because you really practice too, man. We should get a trophy for this. I mean, this is like a competition we're practicing for right here. And I'm be honest with you, I've never heard that conversation in my office before. I've usually actually heard the opposite. And there's been a lot of practice and there's a lot of imagery, a lot of imprints on my mind, a lot of stuff. And it might sound ridiculous, but here's the deal. Let me give you some advice from 15 years. This is 15-year marriage advice right here, right? Look stupid. It's all right. Look stupid, you know. Work on this together. It's what God designed. This is going to be an ongoing years, decades experience of working out how sex works together. And here's the deal. You will not have if you're single here today and you're thinking, man, can I really do that? You will not have a hard time figuring out what to do. Let me just be honest with you. Right? It's like natural. And I'm just telling you what I thought everybody knew. And so here's the truth. Here's actually the truth to this myth. Here's the truth. Romance in marriage is fueled by exclusivity. Romance is actually fueled by exclusivity. For single students, if you're in here today, this is what it looks like for you. You know what exclusivity is? It's when you say, hey, I'm going to withhold expressing my sexuality until I'm in a married relationship. It's saying, I'm going to only have eyes for you. It's saying, you know, I'm going to, even though I don't know you, even though I can't associate a name with you yet, I'm going to pray and wait for you until that day. That's what it looks like if you're single. If you're married, you know what it looks like if you're married? This actually fuels your marriage. And this is what it looks like. It's like when your husband goes on a business trip and he's gone for a week and you don't have to worry at all because you know the past is a predictor of the present. And exclusivity in the past means you have nothing to worry about today. It means, guys, when your wife is out with her girlfriends later than expected and she doesn't call you, that you don't have to be sitting home thinking, well, where's she at? I mean, she didn't call me. What's she doing? Because you know if she's been exclusive in the past with you, then you have no reason to believe that the present isn't going to be any different. Because we understand prudence, we understand the past is a great indicator of the present, and our past shows up in the future. And so a few weeks ago, we looked at the Apostle Paul, who was bringing this message to the city of Corinth in the New Testament, and he's bringing this message to a bunch of new Christians, a bunch of people who are just growing in their relationship with Christ, and they're new to this whole deal. They're a bunch of Romans and Greek people, and they weren't really around the Hebrews and the Israelites, and so this is all new, and he's looking at how they're managing their sex lives, and he's like, oh man, didn't your mom ever sit you down and tell you how this works? I mean, you guys are mismanaging this, and it's creating a lot of pain, and what I'm about to tell you, I mean, it's going to be a little painful, it might step on your toes a little bit, but my intent is to give you a picture of how this is supposed to be, so that you can experience it to its fullest. And so I want to kind of revisit this passage real quick because I want to build on it today. And so we see Paul saying to them in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, he says, do you not know that he who unites, and this next word kind of shocked his audience of that day, shocked some of us. Do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? Now let me explain again what was going on here. This is how the people of that day took this. They're like, Paul unites. Unites? Do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute unites? We're not talking about uniting right here. We're just talking about all raw, all out sex. We're talking about a physical experience that I have, that I walk away from. You're talking about uniting here. You're talking about like super glue made to last forever, gorilla tape stuck on each other. You're talking about scrambled eggs so integrated, mixed up that you can't separate them. We're not talking about uniting. We're just talking about, hey, I went to the temple. There was prostitutes there. It was a normal thing of that day. I paid her a fee. We had sex. We did a little religious experience. We walked away from it. That's what we're talking about here. Who's talking about uniting? And Paul's like, that's why I'm here. I'm here to tell you that this is not what God designed. There's actually uniting that takes place. And then he goes on and he says, for it is said, the two will become one flesh, but whoever is united with the Lord is one with him in spirit. And I know what some of us are thinking right here. You're like, Kurt, man, this is so extreme. I mean, come on, you're making like a mountain out of a molehill. This idea of oneness, I mean, can I be one with one person and then transfer that and become one with another person? And let me see, I understand the kickback. I mean, I get it often. I understand how you can push back a little bit, and I may not be able to answer all your questions. But I want you to think about it this way. Think about it like a piece of duct tape. I mean, sex is intended to be an adhesive agent. And so if you think about it like a piece of duct tape, what happens when, this is what sex does for us, when two become one, then this adhesion is meant to stick to someone. I'm just going to put it here for illustration purposes. And it's meant to stay there for life. And it does that. I mean, it's very sticky when it fulfills its purpose. And what we also know about this is when it is removed or when this is broken or comes off, it's reasonably painful. I did that earlier, so it wasn't as painful as earlier because I pulled some of my hair off earlier. And here's the picture right here. All right, here's the picture. So if I say, well, I'm gonna unite, and this is strictly illustrative right here, okay? I don't know why men are always the ones in the front row. I got a few women right here, but if I go and say, oh, I'm gonna connect with another person, when that comes off, then I come and would you guys mind? All right, no men in the front rows first hour. And I come and I connect it with another person, and notice that wasn't painful at all, was it? And here's where the church usually goes with this. The church will say, they'll go to the fear factor right away. Well, you know, if that person had STDs and you just got those, and you know, there's hair follicles and all kinds of stuff that you just picked up, you take a piece of every person you're with you. Well, while that may be true, I don't really want to focus on the fear side. I want to talk about the love factor for a moment. You know what's amazing to me is that when this first adhered to my skin, it was reasonably painful when I pulled it off, and yet that adhesive factor is gone. I mean, this thing will barely stick to me anymore. What's amazing to me is how mysterious sexuality is. It's intended to be adhesive, and yet when it's misused, when it's shared multiple times in multiple ways, outside of a single context, the adhesive factor is gone. My very first sexual experience was with, get ready, Daisy Duke. And, I saw a documentary. I mean, I was obviously like 11 or 12 at the time. I saw a documentary on the early years of the Dukes of Hazzard a year and a half ago. And, man, as I was watching that, I'm like, man, Daisy and I get a weird kind of connection. All right? It's kind of weird. Even seeing that, it's kind of weird. So, you know, there's an but jokes aside, I mean, you know, jokes aside, I can make light of this, make it build a little humor, but there's really no joking about this. Here's the deal. For me, there was a certain level of adhesion right there. For others, I mean, it's much deeper. It's much deeper. And this is where Oprah never talked about this stuff. I mean, Dr. Ruth, Sue Johnson, they never talk about this stuff because it doesn't sell. You can't sell this stuff, and yet, when you begin to connect the dots and you're beginning to say, man, you know, what's this done for me? And you begin to say, man, I wish this had a little more adhesive factor in my life. There's nothing adhesive going on for me. We begin to say, man, I wish I had a little more of that. You see, Paul then goes on, the next two verses, verse 19. And he says, do you not know? Do you notice how we keep saying this? There's that phrase again. Do you not know? He's like, didn't your mom and dad ever sit and talk to you about this stuff? And usually the answer is no. That your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. And they're like, no, we didn't know that. I mean, God, we thought you were up in heaven and we were down here on earth, and what took place up there and down here were totally separate things. That, you know, I have experiences down here, and yeah, I go into church and I ask for forgiveness, and you do that, and then I go out and do the same things over and over again. No, I didn't know that you were here. And Paul's like, no. Didn't anybody ever tell you this? Didn't anybody ever tell you that you're inhabited? That as a Christian, if you're a Christian, that my spirit is actually inside of you? Who is in you, whom you have received from God? Didn't anybody ever tell you that? He says, do you realize you're not your own? He says, do you realize that if you're a Christian, you are not your own any longer? You were bought, you were redeemed, a price was paid for you. And here's his conclusion, here's the application he gives us. He says, therefore, honor God with your bodies. I mean, you want to know how we get to that place of just complete sexual fulfillment, that complete sexual ecstasy, that point of highest level of sexual fulfillment in life? Paul's given us a secret right here. He said the secret's right here. If you're single, you know how you do that? If you're single again, if you're married, if you're recently divorced, if you're new to the Indianapolis area and you're hanging around with a whole bunch of people who are sexually involved all over the place, you know how you experience the highest level of sexual fulfillment that God designed for you? Paul gives us the picture right here. He says, honor me with your body. He says, honor me with your body. And you know, I know, I've been saying this all series long, I know messages like this, man, I know they fall in a number of places. I know the field is broad. And as the seed kind of falls, I know that it falls in different places. Sometimes there's a lot of guilt. I mean, the church has done a great job in the past of creating a lot of guilt on these issues. I know for some of us there's a lot of regret. There's I wish he was here, I wish she was here, I wish they could hear this. I wish that I'd heard this years ago. I've heard that actually a number of times. I wish I would have heard this years ago. I mean, I know for some of us, there's been these aha moments, these moments where like, man, this is beginning to explain to me what I'm experiencing right now in my marriage. I'm realizing why there's not an adhesive factor, why I'm almost numb to the sexual experience. Here's the deal. Today, as we wrap this up, you know, today I want you to kind of say, what story do I want to tell? When it comes to my sexuality, what story do I want to tell? And here's what I know for sure about every single one of us in this room. If you're single, if you're a student, then someday you are going to come across the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. And at some point, you're going to tell that person your story. You're going to have a story to tell. And if you're married here today, and you're in a marriage where maybe you drug some baggage into that marriage, or you drug some pain from your past, and that continues to resurface, or it's created a numbing in your current relationship, you have a story to tell. Every one of us has a story. And yet I would strongly suggest that as a result of us being here today, that we can come to the place of saying, you know what? What story do I really want to tell in the future? And how do I begin to live that story right now? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Because everybody has a story. And let me tell you what, people lie about their stories. I mean, I have people come in and make appointments with me to sit down in a counseling session. And you know, and I hear this all the time. They lie. I mean, 2, 4, 6, 8 months into marriage, they'll sit down and they don't like the story that their life has written. And yet they'll lie about it. 15 years into marriage, 20 years into marriage, they're still lying about their story. And then one day, you know what happens? The truth comes out. It always comes out. The truth comes out. And they're at a place where all of a sudden they've got to decide, what kind of story do I want to continue to tell? And how do I today begin to make a pathway that tells that story? And there's really only a couple options. I mean, there's really only 2 or 3 stories that we can tell. I mean, here's one. One would be, you know, I was in high school and, you know, went on spring break and I lost my virginity and, you know, which is really interesting when I hear people say that, because you don't lose your virginity. If you ever wonder that? You don't lose it. You give it away, right? I mean, it's not like, wow, I wonder where to go. I just lost it right here. No, you like willingly give it away, all right? But let's say we lost it because we like that better. I lost my virginity, and then I went to college and I was in a sorority, a fraternity, and, you know, I kind of slip around, and eventually I found this one girl I really liked, so I moved in with her, but, you know, it wasn't really exclusive, and eventually, I mean, she really grew on me. I just really got into her. She was into me, and I decided, you know, I really want to turn over a new leaf right here. I want to spend the rest of my life exclusively with her. That's one story. Here's another story, maybe a little different story, maybe a better story. When I was in high school or college, you know, I went on spring break, and you know, I was on spring break, and I lost my virginity, and I could tell you a little story about that, but I won't. And you know, and then when I lost this, I gave this away, and my parents never sat me down and told me. They never told me about this. Nobody ever told me that man, this thing went a lot deeper than just the physical, and eventually I got married and drug all this baggage into my marriage, and now I'm dealing with that, and I'm kind of numb to the sexual deal, and don't really know why it's such a big deal, because it doesn't do anything. There's nothing really adhesive that's going on with it. And then one day I went to this ridiculous church. I can't remember the name of the church. I don't remember the guy that was speaking. I just knew he talked really fast most of the time. And so, you know, I went to this church, and it was as a result of that, as I'm sitting there, I began to hear stuff I'd never heard before. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden there's things that I'm hearing, that I'm experiencing, and it kind of took me by surprise that I'd actually hear this in church. And actually I began to say, wow, that's actually true for me. And then I began to say, wow, I actually am beginning to see this is the picture God designed for me. And that day I decided that my story is going to be a different story. That day I decided, you know, I'm going to begin to write a new story in spite of my past, in spite of my guilt, in spite of my shame, in spite of my regret. I want to begin to honor God with my body, and I want to begin to write a new story. And if I'm single, it means that, you know, it's going to be a little difficult. It might be strange at times as I write this new story. It might be a bit lonely, at least at first. But I decided that day, I mean, I want to honor God with my body and create a different story, because I really don't like the one I have. I mean, think about this. That's an amazing story, isn't it? Isn't that amazing? I mean, the idea of going to the, if you're single or a student, going to that to eventually finding the person you've been praying for, you've been waiting for, and being able to say to the man before I even had a name and a face to associate with you. And let me tell you the story I've been creating. I mean, if you're in a marriage, you know, to be able to say, man, to say to your husband or your wife, I mean, think about the intimacy factor going up as you say, hey, you know, here's my story, and here's the story I'm beginning to write, or I'm continuing to write for you. It's one of keeping our marriage bed pure. You see, we can choose to say, I'm going to tell a different story. In the book of Hosea, we find God, you know, sharing some really interesting things with the Israelite people. And Hosea is a prophet, and the nation of Israel at the time is kind of, God's kind of felt like the nation of Israel has been prostituting him. I mean, they've been into everything but him. They've been into other gods, they've been into all this money, they've been going after, you know, sex and all kinds of stuff. And God's kind of feeling like a violated lover, if we're really honest. This is kind of how it reads. And so he basically says to Hosea, he says, hey, Hosea, I want you to go find the prostitute Gomer, and I want you to marry her. Now, let's be honest. With a name like Gomer, she probably wasn't very successful as a prostitute, right? So he probably didn't have a whole lot of baggage there. But, you know, he says, I want you to go to this prostitute Gomer. I want you to marry her. And I want you to live this thing out in front of all the Israelite people. And you know what God's doing right here? He's saying, hey, I want you to show the Israelite people how I feel right now. And see, God responds in the book of Hosea a lot like a violated lover feels when their spouse cheats on them. I mean, it's like back and forth. It's like there's this deep, deep anger. And he's like, I hate you, I hate you. I'm going to take you for all you're worth. And then all of a sudden it turns around. It's like, I love you though, but I love you. And we've had so many great experiences together. And so it's back and forth. It's like this rubber band, like two violent lovers that love and hate and are just jolting each other back and forth. You know why? Because God is the greatest lover that's ever existed. And he's flat out in love with us. He's flat out in love with you. And so, in chapter 11, there's kind of this monologue that we read, and he's writing this to the people of Israel. And I want to put it on the screens and read it to you, but I've changed the word Israel to the word you, because this is really a monologue to you. The context was to them at that time. It's to us. It's to his beloved. So here's what he says to us. He says, you know that when you were a child, I loved you. I who taught you how to walk, taking you by your arms, but you did not know that I healed you. I drew you with gentle cords, with bands of love. He said, hey, you know, when you scuffed your knee, when you wounded yourself, when you did dumb stuff that made you hurt and you had pain and brokenness, you really didn't know that I was the one that lifted you up and I came with healing and gentle bands of love. And it was I to you, and I was to you as those who will take the yoke from your neck. I was the one who set you free from certain things. I stooped down, I fed you. I mean, how can I give you up right here? You know what God's saying right there? He's saying, how can I quit on you? I can't quit on you. He's saying, how can I turn you over? My heart churns within me. My sympathy is stirred no matter where you are. He's like, hey, I can't get over you. Even though you violate him, I can't get over you. If we think back to this duct tape, you know, when we've done dumb things, we've all done dumb things. And it's affected our hearts. It may have affected our adhesive factor, our the stick factor. And maybe it's affecting our current relationship with our spouse or current dating relationship. And the adhesive factor may just be gone. I mean, maybe our hearts have just kind of been ripped. And we're saying, you know, now what? What do I do? I mean, there's this internal brokenness. And maybe just now, maybe over the last few weeks, we just began connecting the dots. And maybe you're right here and you're saying, what do I do? Where do I go? God loves you. That's what. That's what you do now. You embrace this idea. God loves you. He's not abandoned. He's like, hey, I bent down all through your life. I've brought a salve, a healing bands. There've been ouch moments. There's been a piercing. There's times where God pulls and tugs and pokes you and nudges you to make changes. And sometimes there's a piercing that's felt, but the piercing is always followed by a mending, by a healing, by a salve. And so we're gonna do this song in these next few moments, and love this song. It's one of my favorite songs. We do it here often at Cross Point. And I think one of the reasons I love it is because there's a line in this song that if I could drill this into every one of our hearts today, this line, I mean, this is something you need to carry with you for every day forward. And here's what it says. I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way that he loves. I don't have time. Past is the past. The question is, what kind of story am I going to write in the future? What story am I going to decide to write beginning right now? Because I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way. Listen, and if you want to sing along, feel free to sing along.